Hey everybody, I am Buff head programmer Kai Perignon, and I'm speaking to filmmaker Avalon Fast on Saturday, March 22nd. Avalon, thanks for screening with us and talking to me today.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited.
To start, I want to ask you, it's been a hot minute since you made Honeycomb. How do you feel about it in hindsight? How do you feel like you've changed much as an artist since you put it out? Can you just talk to me about broadly about that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Honeycomb, before Honeycomb, I wasn't recognized and I didn't really recognize myself fully as a filmmaker. And since Honeycomb's been out in the world, I have, and that's been a process in and of itself to consider myself an artist and to really take it seriously. So I think that's one like major change that's happened over the 3 years, 4 years. I've also been in the process, once Honeycomb started screening, right from that point on, I started putting together my new feature Camp, which we just shot last summer. So yeah, lots has changed for me as an artist, just getting to do it, for real. So yeah.
Do you before you put out Honeycomb, you'd made some short films. Did you feel at that point, would you have considered yourself a filmmaker before Honeycomb came out, or is that genuinely just came out after the film was out and you were like seen by the world?
Yeah, I mean, in the right spaces, I considered myself a filmmaker, that's what I wanted to do. Probably from a really, really young age, that's what I wanted to do, like 8 or 9. And in high school, I did do a couple of, film festival things, and I thought about it, but I still considered other, career avenues, I guess. I thought about going to school. I thought about lots of things. It hasn't been until maybe even the past year that I've decided, this is what I'm going to be doing for now, and only this, really. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I mean, okay. Second off that, okay, we talked about being a filmmaker. I want to jump to Cinephile Complex now. Do you think of yourself as a cinephile?
Ooh, good question. Yeah, for sure. I've got like you can see it. I've got all my my media here. I actually have so many more, but I had to take them all to my family's house 'cause they couldn't fit in here, but I definitely love watching movies. And since Honeycomb came out, and then I was more like in the public eye or doing interviews, talking to people about movies, I have watched so many because I wanted to know what I was talking about. I actually worked as a critic on like a podcast before I put Honeycomb out, and I think they just liked that I was excited about movies, but I never had any idea like the names of directors. I remember going to this festival with Night Trouble, which was one of my short films, and somebody outside said that the film had reminded them of like Harmony Korine stuff, and I just thought like that girl sounds amazing. Like that's awesome. Like I had no idea. So over the years, I've been purposefully trying to become more of a cinephile. But I've always loved movies,
Yeah, definitely. I feel like my journey with the movie is similar. At a certain point, love movies a lot, and there's a certain point where to dive in further is a choice, right? What about like, what are some of the movies that? I mean, first of all, I guess what are some of your favorite horror movies? You were talking about Cinephile Complex, but then like broadly beyond that, what are some stuff, some avenues you've been going down in the movie zone?
Well, I always bring up Mandy when I talk about my favorite horror movies, 'cause that one really stuck with me. It still does. It's the first thing that pops up when people bring up horror movies. The original Let the Right One In, also I'm obsessed with. That's the best love story ever, best vampire movie. In terms of movies in general, I'm like freakishly obsessed with, oh, Dracula, like Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. I love and Rumblefish, which is also Francis Ford Coppola.
That's a weird
I think
one,
he might
too.
be my favorite director, which is kind of funny because he's so popular, but I am so obsessed with Rumblefish that, yeah.
Yeah, Rumblefish. This the that has the scene where like Matt Dillon's like floating over the fog and stuff. That's a great bit. Yeah.
Yeah, so good.
Did you like Megalopolis?
I loved Megalopolis. I know that's maybe not controversial, but I don't think it's the general opinion. I just had so much fun. I went and saw it in the theater by myself, and everyone was just like, it was such a vibe. And I feel like he just does not feel like a sellout to me. Like he's just doing exactly what he wanted to do, and it was like his, that was what his, you know, that's really what he wanted to create. And I think that's what I loved about it. It was just, it was so him now, right? As an older man, it's like that's what he wanted to put out there. It's not exactly my thing, but I just like that it exists and he's still making movies.
Respect the vision, right? Yeah, he has
You
the vision.
know?
Yeah. Have you seen oh, my brain, sorry. The stuff he made previously, like the digital movies he made in the 2010s, like Twixt or Tetra. Have you seen any of that stuff? Well,
No.
if you dug Megalopolis, I would really recommend Twixt.
Okay.
Very, very strange movie.
Check
Looks way cheaper.
it out. Yeah, I bet. I'm a big Lynch fan also, obviously. Well, not obviously. I mean, Fire Walk With Me, like
Yeah.
everything.
Would that be
So
your favorite Lynch movie of the ones you've seen?
yeah, that's one of my favorite movies. And then Eraserhead, and I just watched Inland Empire for the first time. Love that. I love Twin Peaks. Yeah.
Inland Empire is probably my favorite Lynch movie, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Just love that. I mean, do you, okay, well, I guess this kind of comes to my next question, actually, which is Inland Empire, very digital movie.
Yeah.
Honeycomb, pretty digital movie. I think you're shooting Camp on film. Am I right there?
We
No, I'm not.
shot a a little bit of it on Super 8.
That's
So it's kind of some mixed media stuff going on, but no, we shot it on digital as well.
digital. Well, okay, so I guess then I guess I have two questions here, which is one, like, how do you feel about like digital aesthetics? Like, is it when you're shooting digitally, are you leaning into that or are you trying to fight back against it? Like, how do you feel about like the digital camera, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I love digital cameras. To me, I mean, that's what I grew up using. Having the automatic zoom for Honeycomb was, you know, I've talked about it before. I'm not a big camera geek. Like, I don't know a ton of stuff, so bear with me. But I love the automatic zoom. It was something I had as a kid, you know, with my like point and shoot camera, and it was something I wanted to be able to shoot with. Just because I like how that looks. And I also didn't know you could do zooms in post, which is like crazy. But so I was like, we have to have a camera with automatic zoom. Yeah, I feel like it's so, film is so foreign to me, really, because it's not what I grew up with. Doing some of the Super 8 stuff with Camp was super cool because it feels like a whole new medium that I hadn't had any experience with. It feels so much more complicated to me than digital. So yeah, and I definitely feel like with Honeycomb, we tried to lean into the digital aspect of it. I mean, even kind of the parts where the girls are kind of setting up like to vlog or something, like they've set up the camera themselves, kind of like that. We definitely leaned into that a bit.
And can you talk a bit about why for camp you've shot this one bit on Super 8? Like what made you want to go there?
Well, my producer Taylor, he was a big Super 8 fan, and he did this movie Cease to Exist that's doing its festival run right now. And yeah, I think he brought it up. It was a way for us to, well, I can't spoil anything, but it was his idea, and he was more familiar with it. So yeah.
And then going back to Cinephile Complex, that's shot on tape, right? And
Yeah.
what was that experience like?
Well, again, that was Taylor, my producer. We met through Honeycomb, actually. He saw a screening of Honeycomb when it was doing Slam Dance online, and then, like, you know, little by little, we got in touch and connected, and then we've been working together since. But I went out to Calgary where he lives. He had a VHS camera. I think he had this idea of making this horror movie super cheap on this VHS camera, and it was kind of a test for us to see if we could work together. And yeah, I think it worked out. So
And
yeah.
did you find like were you was this like a, were you shooting with like a classic old style tape camera like there you what am I asking you? Like could you come up with any technical difficulties while you were shooting? Was it like dealing with this old tech?
Well, he dealt with it mostly. He set up a little camera, or not a little camera, a little TV for us to watch, like as a monitor. So it was like connected to the camera. So we had to like move with the little TV and the camera, but he held the camera. He dealt with that. Again, I'm not a camera person. I don't like the stress of it. It's just like, that's your thing. You do that. I'll be over here.
Yeah, I've worked on films with where I'm the cinematographer, and having cinematographer Very nice. Someone else, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
And okay, also in Cinephile Complex, I just keeping on the visual zone, I really love that final overlay of I think the character's name is Anna's face over one of the bros crying over the briefcase. And it's mostly because I think that actress's eyes are like so locked in and scary. Can you talk about like your directing process with the actors?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, her, she's just got such a great look, you know. Anyways, I feel like she really took that away herself, you know, that performance in particular. I don't know how guided that was by me. I think, you know, she just had that in her. But it's been interesting, you know. Honeycomb was with my friends, and I think they really understood what I'd written for them because it was for them, and it was somewhat mirroring who we were back then. And I could communicate with them on a level like they knew me, you know, we're already friends. Cinephile Complex, I don't remember so well. It also felt it was friends, but it there was maybe a little more guidance there. It was really with camp that, you know, I started. There were times where I realized I was going to have to sit down and have these conversations with actors if I wanted to get what I envisioned. It wasn't just going to happen naturally because they didn't know who I was. And maybe, you know, they hadn't had as much time with the script as other actors. And it's easier with some people and it's harder with others. And I don't think that's a bad thing, you know, like that doesn't make a bad actor. It was cool to be able to have those conversations and to really work to get something. And it's like when you're making movies with no money, you know, like with Honeycomb or Cinephile, it's like actually working with your actors is kind of on the back burner, you know? You're just trying to get like through the day. So again, camp was maybe the first time where I actually had this prep time and I could be thoughtful and really think about performance, but not even as much as I'd want. It still felt rushed, so because it's still, you know, we're so indie, and it was new to all of us. But yeah, so I look forward to getting to do more of that in the future, I guess.
Are you someone who has like all this backstory ready to go for like if an actor asks it for you?
Yeah, I thought a lot about each one of these characters. I guess for myself, I did a lot of prep with these characters and mood boards or whatever, how they would dress and what their lives were like before. I actually wrote, you know, like 3 pages of each character's where they came from, who they are, and then sent them off, you know, in pre. So,
In Honeycomb and Cinephile Complex, and I also watched your short, Rebecca's B-Day Party. They all, yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought you might react like that. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, I forgot that was online. I forgot that was public. That was funny. That was a good day.
It seemed like a good day. It seemed like a very fun shoot. And also, I was delighted because I was like, oh, I have thematic concerns that I see recurring because that movie, although it's fu funnier than I don't know, it's funny. The Cinephile Complex, they're both pretty funny, but that's a movie about kind of uncomfortable gender lines, like kind of divisions in that space, right? And in that one, industry because they're all the women are kind of confronting the masculine figure, right? And you is this like I just see you in your work like these gender tensions kind of recurring, and I was
Oh
just like yeah, so is this like a conscious thing for you, like are you is and are you seeing like especially Cinephile Complex, I guess I was wondering, like do you feel the film bro gender divide, is that, do you still feel that, does that have you experienced that in the real world?
yeah. Cinephile Complex was absolutely me shouting out one person in particular. You know, I'm not going to be that person. But yeah, I mean, you know, on like a deeper level, you know, I was actually talking with the actor that plays Willow in Honeycomb last night. We were talking about just growing up and being quiet, you know, in social settings and how that can still exist now, but there's been a change. And you know what's cool is that there's been a big change in my life and my gender dynamics by being the director and the boss, you know, that's changed a lot. And that's really cool. just to watch because yeah, there was a lot of my life where it was, it was the boys' world and it was the boys talking and we were quiet and we were listening and it's just cool to see that shift and it's definitely something it's like a question that hasn't been fully answered for me and Honeycomb was definitely the start of me asking those questions. So, yeah.
And did you feel you talking about kind of being in that directorial position is kind of changing your ability to kind of navigate these spaces? Was and you mentioned kind of growing up and being a bit more quiet. Like, was it you're in director mode, at least maybe when you started, is that a shift, like a conscious shift you had to make to like be in the director space, or it was kind of a natural extension?
I think naturally, I don't want to be like I'm a natural leader, but I was always, I was making plans and stuff and I had those instincts. But yeah, it was hard to be in that position, especially with your friends. It definitely was awkward at times. I found it a lot more natural in a professional way when we were shooting camp and even with Cinephile, just it was like, okay, we're really making a movie and the people here have made movies before and we know what we're doing and with camp people are getting paid. So I felt more comfortable. It felt natural to be in that position and to do the job right because people want to be told what to do, right? That's why they're there. So it was easier to do them with Honeycomb. But yeah.
Yeah, do you and I mean, bouncing off that, do you feel like the okay? You said a few times the camp you're actually paying people. Could you tell me like what how much money you're working with in camp approximately?
No.
That's fair enough.
I can't, sorry.
No, that's totally
Mostly
fair enough.
because I don't know too well and I don't want to say anything that
Fair enough, but more money than Honeycomb, we can say, yeah.
Significantly more money than Honeycomb. I mean, Honeycomb was made with my personal, funds. So like I've thrown around different numbers. I never really knew for sure, somewhere between $1,000 and $4,000, and camp was funded. So yeah, it was completely different.
And that was a space of you're saying you were working with not friend actors. And so was and you've talked a bit about this, but can you just get a bit more into this space of like the how the dynamic shifts? Because I understand 100% what you're saying about like you're working for no money on a movie and it's hard to be like, do this because you're like, thank you. But beyond that, were there any differences in like working with a more professional setup?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was a completely different experience. I mean, Honeycomb was it was the last summer. I just graduated high school. We were spending the summer on Cortez Island where it was shot primarily. It was when people had time. People were working their jobs. These were my friends. They were not actors. A lot of them that are now actors weren't sure if that's what they wanted to do then. Anybody was holding the camera. We'd never used sound gear before. It really was like a bunch of friends learning how to make a movie. And camp was a bunch of, new professionals that had done it, before. So yeah, it was like showing up to work in the morning and we all had, this is on camp, we all had breakfast, that was brought there by a catering company. Like it was like a real job. So it was completely different. It was really cool.
Great, thank you. Okay, my next question. Okay, I've written a long question. I'm trying to make it shorter. Okay, here's what I'm asking you. I watched your 2019 short Scarlet's Fever, which I also liked, and I thought and
Oh,
that movie has like very kind of I would say like very com precisely composed like static images. And then as you go further, I felt like in Honeycomb, there's a bit of a rougher style, although there's still a lot of static camera in that movie. We've talked a bit about the like confessional sequences. And then in Rebecca's B-Day Party and Cinephile Complex, it's a lot more handheld, I felt like, and a lot more kind of like loose feeling. So can you just talk to me about like your approach to image making? Like, is that a thing you're really thinking about on set beforehand? Are you storyboarding a lot? Is it much more made up on the spot? Like, how are you approaching the actual image?
Yeah, I like stable a lot. There's something about, this is something I've been thinking about more, but for me, there's something so amateur about stability, which is funny because I feel like you'd think it would be the other way around, but when there's less movement, You can really feel that people are trying to make a movie, and I love that feeling. Like filling a stable shot and letting the actors move around it rather than moving with them is so awkward, but it's fun, and I think I'm like addicted to that feeling, and I don't know how other people feel about it sometimes, because there's still I've kept that going in a lot of my work. I do love yeah, like you said, Cinephile Complex, there's definitely a lot more movement. I think it really depends on who was holding the camera too, right? Like it's been different for almost every movie that I've shot. I've had somebody else holding the camera. So, yeah. Yeah, it's something that I think about for sure. I thought about it with camp a lot, and storyboarded ahead of time and, shot lists and all the things. But the other ones was just kind of go with the flow.
Well, great. Thank you. Great. Thank you. Okay. Next question is, okay, you've been working on camp for a while, it looks like, based off me looking up stuff. Like, how long have you been in production on it? What for?
Well, I started writing it. I'm gonna get the years wrong. 2021, because Honeycomb came out in 2022, and I'd written it before Honeycomb came out, the first draft. And then, so what? That's 4 years. And then, yeah, I've been working on the script kind of up until right before we shot last June. And yeah, so that was cool. It was cool to have that long to, think about one story. I really was just thinking about that one story. We made Cinephile Complex within that, but to me, honestly, that movie came together so quickly. It wasn't the focus of, what I was doing.
And in like letting the story percolate a long time, like is, I mean, it takes so long to make a movie, right? Even like small ones take a lot of effort. Like how do you find the drive to keep working on it, to keep thinking about it, to keep pushing the script around in your head, and then to actually put together? Like how do you how, what's what drives you?
I don't know. Good question. It's just impossible not to, and it's annoying. I had this bad habit of getting like, drunk with my friends and just talking about camp. And I'm so glad it's done because I don't do that anymore. It's very close to being done, but it'll happen again. And it happens with any story that, I'm interested in telling. It's just I can't help it. I really can't help it. I can't help thinking about it. I can't help wanting it to be made. So, yeah.
Do you have a, I have this thing where like if I'm, I'll get like, I feel like guilty if I'm not working on a project for like a few days. I need to relax. Yeah, do you get that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I feel like it's good and bad, you know?
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's like I get anxiety too about it. And now that I work with people who actually, are expecting things done at a certain time, it's more scheduled, and I definitely do feel that guilt and anxiety at times, but once I'm in it, it's not hard to get it done, I guess.
Can you tell us any more about camp at all? Not you don't have to get into big details, but you said you started writing it before Honeycomb came out, and you just finished shooting it in June, you said, right? So yeah, can you just tell us a little bit more? Just give us some spicy details.
Ooh, I don't know what to say. I'm so ready for it to exist because it's been a long time of me thinking about it and keeping it in, and we've been pretty private about it, online and stuff. I don't know if that's just because we're how we're feeling about it, and I just it'll be really cool to see what people think about kind of the progression from Honeycomb. When like you feel as an artist, maybe that you've I don't feel like I've outgrown Honeycomb, but I'm so ready to have something else be what's talked about because it's more current and it's more relatable to me, and it's fresh, and I have more to say. So yeah, I'm just really excited. I don't really know how much I can say, but I'm just so excited for there to be something new out there.
Well, I'm excited for you too. I'm gonna push you a little bit more on this question just because I'm curious
Yeah,
about one
go.
specific aspect, which is it's is it now when it's called camp, is it about a summer camp?
Oh yeah, I can tell you that. It's about a summer camp.
Okay, but so do you have experience at a summer camp? Because I went to summer camp as a teenager.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
was very formative space for me. It was a very important space for me. Yeah. In a kind of, I guess,
Okay,
somewhat
cool.
embarrassing way, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I had a horrible, horrible time at camp. Every time I was sent to a couple different ones and I cried and called home from everyone. I didn't always get picked up. Once I did, and I think that was the last time. I actually got picked up early because I had this big meltdown. So camp was formative for me as well, but in a depressing way. So, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I had a similar experience when I was a camper. I definitely wrote some letters home. I definitely was crying a lot. Yeah. It's but yeah.
Yeah.
Because
You get it.
it's a weird space, right? Because you're like you are alone. It is this kind of I kind of thought
Yeah.
as like have you ever done like a theatrical production or something where it just feels like you're in a little universe for a while, you know,
Yeah.
and things are heightened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and Vancouver Island, you know, where I grew up, it's like totally classic Pacific Northwest camp, you know. We actually went and revisited one of the camps that I went to as a kid and had my meltdown at. And we wanted to shoot there, and it would have been so perfect. You know, when you remember something being scary or big as a child, and then you go back when you're older and it's not scary and it's not as big as you remember it. But it wasn't like that. It was just as scary and just as big as I remembered it as a kid, like worse. And I was like, we have to shoot here. But then we couldn't. So they didn't like the content of the script.
They didn't want you making some fucked up thing there.
Oh.
The cowards, the cowards. And I'm sure that many horrible things have happened at many camps
I
around.
know.
Let the truth come out. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. When I was I definitely cried a lot when I was a camper. And then I also cried a lot when I was a counselor. I'll say that too. So
Yeah. Oh, you're a counselor.
I was a
Cool.
counselor too. Yeah.
Oh, you'll like camp then. There's a good camp counselor.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited to see my life reflected on screen and it'll be like,
Oh,
no.
and you know what's so funny is he's got an Australian accent.
There we go.
Because and he's not Australian. It was a part of that story because there are so many people come over from Australia and then work at these summer camps, right? That was my experience as a kid, so that's funny.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's the international counselor, right? Well, this isn't related to the interview. This is just like when else is going to come up. When I was at summer camp, there was a ghost story that went around from like an international counselor. Which was basically, well, he was Russian, I believe, but the idea was that this guy, what he used to, he put campers in sleeper holds,
Okay.
consensually, you know, kind of, and eventually got kicked out for obviously, and then but for years, I think this is real, for years, I think he would come back to the camp and just like mess with campers because he basically got kicked out, and then he was about to be like deported basically, and then he
No way.
hopped off the van. And just kind of
Oh
ran
my
into the woods. And yeah, for years, I would hear stories, and they'd be like, yeah, this the walker. He's campers dragged out of their cabins. People would see him in the woods, and he dropped like dead rabbits and stuff off of the on the porches. And you're laughing. You're like, it's a funny ghost story. And then while I was there,
Yeah.
it was a news story that came out. And I don't remember the guy's actual name, but it was like guy who was working at a summer camp 20 years ago has been living in a false identity 20 minutes away. And he's been bound and arrested. And I was like, oh, so he probably actually was doing that. This guy actually was like,
No way. That's crazy.
The International Council vibe, I guess. Yeah.
A good story. I like that. I should write it. About that.
Yeah, I mean, the sequel to Camp, the R Russian guy coming back just to the doing some sleeper
Yeah.
hold. You
Yeah.
All right, kind of bouncing away from camp, bouncing away from the movies a bit. We talked about this before we started recording, but I think the audience would find it interesting. You were in Adelaide, Australia, somewhat recently. So, can you talk about what brought you to
What?
Thunder and that experience?
Again, I'm like, how much can I speak about? But I'm in Alice Mae McKay's new movie, Serpent Skin. I'm very excited for that too, and very nervous because it's my first role that I hadn't written for myself. I mean, you've seen my acting performance, and you watch Scarlet's Fever, which is very random as well. But I had never acted in. I'd acted in a short that Taylor did, but this was. This was big. It was a feature, you know, and it was 3 weeks of acting and prepping, and I took some classes before, and yeah, that was so fun. It was really funny to not be directing, But to be on set and to just have my iced coffee and be chatting it up with my co-stars, just being a diva and not stressing about any of the behind the scenes stuff. I was like, not my problem. I'm the actor. It was fun.
And did you find you liked acting outside of this more the space that you were more control of it?
I wanna keep acting. I think it would be a nice way to potentially make some money out here in the filmmaking world. That would be super cool. And it feels so different to me, to just be, yeah, to be, and it's like being, guided by somebody else. I think I like both. I think I like guiding and I like being guided. So, yeah, it was cool. I'd do it again.
Rad. That's good to hear. I'm excited to see Serpent Skin, and I'm excited to see you in it. Alice, we've played. I think Static Vision has played a couple of her movies a few years ago. So definitely in the Melbourne cool filmmaking zone.
Yeah, totally. She's awesome.
You're also in Castration Movie, am I right?
I am a castration movie. Yeah.
I unfortunately haven't seen it. I had to miss the day of screen here, but or the days of screen here. But did you enjoy that
Very
experience? It's very
long.
long. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, the way Louise shoots is so relaxing because she only does it like once or twice, She's like, we got it. And I just think that I'm like warming up for something, and she's like, we got it. So that's fun. I was actually supposed to go over to her house today to plan for the second half, but she's sick, so we're gonna do it next week. But that's been a very cool experience as well.
Well, that's fun to hear that she has the like Clint Eastwood style of directing. I love that. We're done. That's awesome. That's
Move on.
yeah, move on. I mean, I guess you got to have that when the movie's so long as well. I can't have 15 takes, right? Even though maybe it
Yeah,
would.
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, we're screening your work at an underground film festival. Do you consider yourself an underground filmmaker?
I guess so. Like, yeah, I feel like Honeycomb's kind of underground, right? Would you consider me an underground filmmaker?
From your work I've seen, I would consider you an underground filmmaker. Yeah, you're making stuff in very small budgets slash no budgets with a bunch of kind of either let's say non-professional people or like recently professional people. You're working in kind of a transgressive space as well. So I would say so, yeah. But it's like a loose thing. I mean, do you like that? I mean, obviously we can imagine we all wish we were making the big bucks and the success, right? But do you like working in like the smaller spaces? Is that appealing to you beyond necessity?
I actually made this movie too that I haven't really talked about at all, but I'll talk about it now because it proved to myself that I like making movies with no money. I wasn't sure. At first it's just that you don't have any to make the movie with, but after camp, my best friend and co-writer, co-director Jillian Frank wrote Drinking and Driving, this movie that we shot on this like digital handy cam. That's super cool. And yeah, we did that for the same budget we did Honeycomb with, just some leftover money. I'm actually so deep in debt because of that movie. I like to tell people that I'm deep in debt from Drinking and Driving, and then like just not explain anymore. But yeah, so I love making underground movies, I guess, and being that kind of filmmaker. But yeah, it would be there's some ideas that I have that I guess would call for a higher budget, like Camp did, and then I'm happy to work with that if it comes along too. But yeah.
Cool. Rad. I'm gonna get real broad now. I'm just gonna go here. Like, what inspires you? Like, what are you walking? Are you someone who takes long walks? Like, how do you find the creative spirit, you know?
I do take long walks. I don't know. I think it's, talk about gender dynamics, things kind of like broader themes of my work and stuff, but I think there's a huge thing that doesn't get talked about as much, which is like home. and where I grew up, which was a very small town, and I can't fucking get over it, and I can't seem to get over anything, and I think I just keep kind of asking these questions in different ways, and I'm so confused about like home and life and like where I came from and what's gonna happen next, and that it just it like keeps me sane, I guess, to write these questions down and then make movies about them. So yeah, that I think.
Do you, one, do you still live where you grew up? Is there, are you, have you moved to a different spot?
I moved to a different spot, but it's still close, and I still go home sometimes. We went home when we shot Drinking and Driving, which was screwed up. And I'm kind of looking forward to getting farther away for a while, but I think I'll keep returning. Yeah, it's a huge part of me.
And how would you like, I've asked this question to a few filmmakers. How would you like describe like the space you were up in, like psychically? Like, what's the energy there?
It's dark, you know. It was very isolated. I was an only child, and I'm not really anymore. I've got a brother, but it was very lonely, and it was really dark, and it was moody. And I think that is, and I didn't sleep very well as a kid, so it was kind of scary. And I think, and those are the first things that come to mind. It was beautiful too, where I grew up. I grew up on a farm in the mountains. It was like very idyllic. But yeah, it was pretty lonely. So I had a lot of time to think about stories and to make my movies. Yeah.
And the place you live now, is it a little less lonely? Is it a little less isolated?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I live with my best friend and partner Henry, which is very nice. And I have a lot of friends out here. I live in the city, so it feels less lonely for sure. I've definitely like surrounded myself with people a lot since I was a kid, because it's nice to have friends. It's nice to be social.
I said, yeah, I'm with you there. And
Yeah.
I also live in the city. I live in the CBD of Melbourne.
Thanks.
Do you find anything about the city you dislike? Do you find it oppressive at all?
Not really. I definitely get like frustrated sometimes with city things, and I miss home, and I think about going to sleep and like hearing the trees and like the rain and all that. And that's something, like, again, when I say I'll keep returning, like I will keep going back. I'm going back in a week, actually. I'm subletting my place, and I'm going to try to get my mind in a good spot to go out and do these movie things again, kind of the more public movie things. I want to take a minute back home and chill out. So yeah, there's things I like about both, but I have to be in the city too. I don't think it would be like very healthy for me to go and, hide away just yet. That's something for later, maybe.
Yeah, just temporarily in between. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any filmmakers right now? You've already mentioned a couple of them, but are there any other filmmakers that are working right now whose work you really connect with? We talked about Alice Mae McKay and Louise Weird. You can talk about them more if you want.
Jane Schoenbrums. I don't know if
Sure.
that's how you say the name, but yeah, I saw the TV Glow. We're all going to the World's Fair. That's like, they're one of, the working directors right now that I connect with their work super heavy. And I saw the TV Glow in pre-production for camp, which was super spiritual for me at the time. Ethan Ang, he did Therapy Dogs.
Dogs, yeah.
We were in the same festival sphere together there.
Yeah, I would have seen Honeycomb and Therapy Dogs the same slam dance, I think, right? Yeah.
I'm very excited to see what Ethan does next. Amanda Kramer, and who else? I can't think of anybody else. Those are the people that come to mind. Oh, Weston Rasuli, Riddle of Fire. That's
Riddle of Fire.
such a good movie.
Right.
Riddle of Fire. I also feel like, for me, Riddle of Fire is talking about home so heavily. It's this movie that there's nothing objectively sad about it. I saw it at TIFF a couple years ago, and I was like, this is the first movie I've connected with so heavily that is not sad, but it still is sad because it's so clearly about home and about childhood, and it's very nostalgic and still made me sad, but it's a fun movie.
Reel of Fire. Reel of Fire. I on my list now to check out. Bouncing off of that, you're talking about kind of this, we're kind of talking around this nostalgic space and this kind of idea of home, coming back to home and leaving home and stuff. Are you someone who has like nostalgia for certain movies or like artworks? Are you someone who like every once in a while returns to like I don't know, like the Never Ending Story, that type of deal? Do you have any childhood favorites that will come up?
Coraline's the best movie that's ever been made, I think. I love Where the Wild Things Are. And I like the Never Ending Story. I didn't grow up with that one as much. I didn't even really grow up with Coraline, I guess. I don't know if there was shows that I are very nostalgic for me, things like that. But yeah, I guess Coraline would be my favorite like childhood movie.
What about Coraline to you really speaks to you?
Oh my goodness. It's just so scary. And it's also, Pacific Northwest. I think it's supposed to be like it's shot in Oregon, maybe. I could be wrong about that. I just rewatched it the other day. I wish I had some more interesting things to say about it. I love the cat. It feels lonely to me. She feels very independent. Kind of all by herself. There's these characters around her that kind of help her out, but she is really on her own. I had cats growing up, and that was a super important part of my life. I just like really connect to that cat and girl relationship.
What your cat and girl relationship? Were the cats you grew up with, were they very cuddly or were they very like standoffish? So we have some cats who they're neighbor's cats and they love being around people, but they don't like being touched. Or they don't like being like sitting in your lap or anything. They're kind of weirdly standoffish, but also want to be right next to you, you know?
We had barn cats growing up, and they would have kittens, and they were at one point we had 15 cats at the house that I grew up at, but we only had one indoor cat. Her name was Mouse. We got her as a kitten, and from a different we paid for her. She was like an expensive cat. I think my mom wanted her, and Mouse is still with us today, and she's the best cat. She was my best friend growing up. That's just how it was. The barn cats were their own thing. They had their own lives, but me and Mouse were like sisters. She still exists out there. And I don't know about the other cats. They might as well, but I don't see them. So, yeah.
Wow. Wow, I'm glad that Mouse is still kicking, and what a great name for cat as well. Okay, so I guess just to wrap up finally. Are there any final sentiments you want to impart to the audience that's watching this today?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I don't know. Oh God, I read this. I don't know why I'm thinking about this now, but I read this beautiful review on Letterboxd. Somebody wrote about Honeycomb, and I just couldn't believe what people were pulling out of that movie. And just how I think it's cool because it's not me. It's the collaboration of, me and my girlfriends and some of my guy friends, but just to having been really in that space when we made Honeycomb, that really was where we were at. And there seems to be just so much people are pulling from it that I didn't intend to have happen. And I'm just so curious what people are pulling from it. So if people ever want to tell me something that they pulled from it or they felt from it, even if it's super far out and off, I'd love to hear it. I really do like hearing these things. So yeah,
That sounds
that,
like
I
the
guess.
movie's kind of taken on a life of its own now from you. That sounds nice. Yeah.
It's nice.
Man. Well, thank you so much, Avalon. I really
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you.
it.